Listen to us talk, we are world renowned. Download our podcast, where you will consume all the doom and gloom from 99 and Max. Many sound design always inspires to your heart's desire. Hey man, you know there's nothing that we lack. Past your ears into your mind, through the heart, all the facts. On your podcasting app comes a basic white man with a rusty microphone in his red right hand.
It's Super Bowl 2016. A few families with kids all around the same age gathered at a friend's house to watch the favored Carolina Panthers take on an aging Peyton Manning of the Broncos. Now, my buddy invited one of his childhood friends named Anthony, who wound up stealing the show. He had us on the floor with his commentary because his enthusiasm was almost childlike, and he was prone to random outbursts, putting people in headlocks, and this one particular phrase that became part of our lexicon from that day forward. "Manning with time," he would yell whenever the Broncos QB hung in the pocket for more than a second. If he said "Manning with time" once, he said it 1,000 times that night with zero self-awareness. Turns out, "Manning with time" was all the Broncos needed to cruise to a decisive win over Cam Newton and the Panthers.
Well, that's definitely one of your more random introductions to an episode.
It's one of those core memories that kept coming back to me when I was going through the Heritage Foundation 2025 plan. Republicans with time. Republicans with time on their hands is a very dangerous thing. And only Anthony's words from 2016 kept me from tearing my hair out as I reviewed this conservative action plan. Republicans with time. Now, we've covered the rise of conservative think tanks in America and the negative consequences they've had on the social and economic fabric of this country. It's an insidious process that deserves a quick review. Billionaires and their minions come up with ideas and plans to hoard wealth and consolidate power. They fund think tanks to develop white papers that provide a policy rationale to implement these changes. Then they pass this information to billionaire-funded nonprofit advocacy groups to craft model legislation for Republican legislators in Congress and state legislatures. Corporately controlled conservative media gins up controversy to manufacture consent in the court of public opinion, and legislators then appear on conservative talk shows to talk about the model legislation they're proposing that is backed by solid research from the think tanks. Bills pass, and then they're challenged in court, only to lose said challenges because the billionaire-backed Federalist Society has stacked the district courts, appellate divisions, and now the Supreme Court with conservative activist judges. And that's how you carry out a long, bloodless coup. And as we've talked about before, the world heavyweight champion of think tanks is the Heritage Foundation, the bête noire of this program. In so many ways, Heritage has paved the way for the current state of affairs. Bloated military budgets and endless war, tax cuts for the wealthy, gutting social services, criminalizing reproductive health, kids in cages, anti-transgender legislation, rampant deregulation, union busting, just some of the knockouts from the heavyweight champ.
Republicans with time.
The Heritage Foundation was founded in the early 1970s with money from the Coors family, which had a long history of funding conservative causes. It was a slow start, but then suddenly, Republicans unexpectedly found themselves with time on their hands when a relatively unknown governor from Plains, Georgia, named Jimmy Carter, beat the accidental president, Gerald Ford. Again, it's territory we've covered before. Think of all the conservative powerhouse inventions that arose in such a short period of time. The whole thing kicked off with the Powell Memo in 71, then George Mason University split from UVA in 72. The Heritage Foundation was founded in 73, the Cato Institute in 77 with Koch brothers money. Chicago school economic policies take center stage amidst stagflation. James Buchanan and Michael Horowitz began shaping the conservative agenda to take over the courts in the late 70s, leading to the creation of the Federalist Society. This was the neoliberal intellectual framework determined to turn back social and economic progress for the masses. The Heritage Foundation kicked into high gear during the Carter years and was locked and loaded upon the election of Ronald Reagan with a stream of policy proposals and research that ultimately shaped the governing platform of both Reagan terms. Fellows and staff members of Heritage were drafted by the administration, such as Edwin Meese, who served as Reagan's attorney general. Heritage policy recommendations, from tax cuts and welfare reform to rampant deregulation and aggressive militarization, were all pursued, promoted, and enacted. More than 60% of the foundation's proposals made it into policy under Reagan.
Republicans with time.
So Republicans were still on a hot streak after Reagan when his VP, George W. Bush, was elected. There was a sense that Republicans might never lose the presidency again. The Gulf War was enormously popular with the American people, and Bush's continuation of Reagan-era policies were as well, until they weren't. After a dozen years, Republicans once again found themselves on the sidelines. On the sidelines with time. Then midway through the first Clinton term, the Republican Party released the much-ballyhooed Contract with America, a reassertion of principles and policy prescriptions for the Republican Party. More tax cuts, work requirements and time limits for welfare, tough penalties for criminals, tort reform, term limits, more deregulation, more money for the military, and a balanced budget reform. Surprisingly, the Republicans were outdone on most of these items by the Clinton administration, just not in the way that one might hope. A few of the agenda items have yet to be enacted, such as the balanced budget amendment and term limits, but most of the policies wound up making it through the legislature and were signed into law by President Clinton. So basically, Clinton's answer to these devastating neoliberal reforms was to steal Republicans' thunder and just do them himself. After the Clinton era, it was time for another Bush era, this one twice as long as the first and hand-delivered by the Supreme Court. But not before another initiative was birthed by a conservative think tank in the waning days of Clinton's second term. The Project for a New American Century was an organization comprised of Nixon and Reagan flunkies like Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Bill Kristol, and Paul Wolfowitz, all of whom would assume roles in W's administration. PNAC, as it's known, became fodder for conspiracy theorists for two reasons. The first is that one of its central foreign policy initiatives in a document titled Rebuilding America's Defenses from September of 2000 was to pursue regime change in Iraq. The second is that it plainly stated that, well, let me just read from the report and see if you can spot the moment that still fuels conspiracy theories to this day. Quote, "To preserve American military preeminence in the coming decades, the Department of Defense must move aggressively to experiment with new technologies and operational concepts and seek to exploit the emerging revolution in military affairs. The effects of this military transformation will have profound implication for how wars are fought, what kinds of weapons will dominate the battlefield, and inevitably, which nations enjoy military preeminence. The process of transformation, even if it brings revolutionary change, is likely to be a long one, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. Domestic politics and industrial policy will shape the pace and content of transformation as much as the requirements of current missions," end quote.
Ooh, I get it. I spotted it.
Oh, great job, Manny. Go right ahead.
Affairs.
What do you mean?
It says military affairs. They were obviously planning to create a super regiment of potent soldiers to roam the world over and fuck dignitaries' wives so they'd have American soldier babies, which would tie world leaders up in family court for decades.
Ah, there's a problem with your theory. Don't you think if that was the plan, they would have recruited you, the most fertile and prolific lover in all the land?
Huh, damn, you're right.
The Pearl Harbor-like catalyzing event would come just 1 year later, and the PNAC blueprint would be adopted and enacted almost overnight.
Republicans with time.
Republicans with time, indeed. Now, I don't think I need to rehash what happened the last time Republicans found themselves out of office. But here's a quick overview anyway. A black Democrat gets the top job. In response, the Tea Party is formed. Ayn Rand sycophants are elected to Congress to block any and all movement after the first midterm bloodbath, except for droning innocent civilians into the Stone Age in foreign countries, bailing out Wall Street, and giving bankers a pass on the financial crisis. They had time to get their shit together until A fly flew into the ointment. Shit hit the fan. The car went off the rails. We hit a brick wall. Oh, yes. Republicans had plans.
And I'd have succeeded if it weren't for those meddling kids.
And then this fucking guy said Obama wasn't born here. Then Obama insulted him. He came down an escalator and...
I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters.
And he won. Now, a lot of bad shit happened under Trump. Withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accord, ultra-conservative Supreme Court nominations, upending of diplomatic norms, tariffs that actually hurt U.S. job growth and GDP, the bungled response to the pandemic resulting in hundreds of thousands of needless deaths, more tax cuts for the wealthy, federal agencies gutted, billionaires cheating the tax code with impunity, controversial pardons, the demonization of the LGBTQ community, hindering investigations, trying to subvert the election, giving important roles to family members, stealing campaign funds to pay for his legal defense in multiple cases, being impeached twice. Oh, and he's also a rapist, serial sexual abuser, and a pathological liar. And he's the Republican nominee for president. Again. By, like, a landslide. Now look, we've done a lot of soul-searching and hand-wringing over this rematch. I do not believe that Biden is fit to remain in office. His legislative accomplishments in the first years were impressive by historical standards, but he fucked progressives on key issues like minimum wage and student debt relief, and he didn't go far enough on climate resilience, Medicaid expansion, immigration reform, and poverty alleviation. And now he's turning hard against immigration reform by backing punitive measures at the border and facilitating the ongoing slaughter of Palestinians in Gaza. And despite performative support of unions and even some important measures that do protect the right to organize, he failed to bring the corporate class to heel during the inflation crisis, which gave cover to the Federal Reserve to jack up interest rates and crush households all over the country. Biden's bottom-up, middle-out strategy can work, but it needs way more time than he likely has. So as a result, people feel less well off than they did under Trump, and that's not good. Biden's lost key support among Arab and Muslim voters that have a demonstrable impact in key states like Michigan. Also, not good. He took way too long to address the border crisis, and when he finally did, he adopted the Republican stance just like Clinton did in the 90s. So if you're not going to differentiate yourself from the opposition on such a critical issue, then what's the fucking point? The hell of this whole thing is that as bad as Biden has been for Palestine, there's no question Trump would be worse. As bad as Biden has been on the border, there's no question Trump would be worse. And as bad as Biden has been for the working poor and the impoverished, Trump would be way worse. But it doesn't end there. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can just take the Republican Party's word for it. When Trump won the first time, even Republicans were surprised. That's why it took them a while to kind of get their ducks in a row. Right? So if you recall, Trump's only real legislative accomplishment before he lost power in the midterms was the enormous tax cut for the wealthy. That's all they could agree upon. Everything else was pretty much done by executive order and definitely by the seat of his pants. Now, this time around, we've got
Republicans with time.
That's right. And they have a plan. Moms for Liberty, Turning Points USA, Tea Party Patriots, National Right to Work Foundation, Liberty University, Hillsdale College, ALEC, more than 80 organizations have co-signed the new Heritage Foundation plan titled Project 2025, the Presidential Transition Project, and it's a fucking doozy. So what you're about to hear is entirely pulled from the 900-page book these organizations drafted for the presidential transition. Now, I read it so that you don't have to. That's why it took me a couple of weeks. And I am going to editorialize on a couple of these where I think it's necessary to clarify the meaning, but mostly the work just kind of speaks for itself. And it's very important that we take them at their word, because a lot of what you're going to hear can be done by executive order. Now, a lot of it can't, but the nightmare scenario, of course, is that Trump takes over with control of both houses again and is way more prepared to enact several of the measures you're about to hear. So, all right, Manny, let's take them through it.
All right, let's go. First one gets right into the culture wars. Check it. Quote, deleting the terms sexual orientation and gender identity, diversity, equity, and inclusion, gender, gender equality, gender equity, gender awareness, gender sensitive, abortion, reproductive health, reproductive rights, and any other term used to deprive Americans of their First Amendment rights out of every federal rule, agency regulation, contract, grant, regulation, and piece of legislation that exists.
Quote, the noxious tenets of critical race theory and gender ideology should be excised from curricula in every public school in the country.
Quote, allowing parents or physicians to reassign the sex of a minor is child abuse and must end.
Quote, the next conservative president should work with Congress to enact the most robust protections for the unborn that Congress will support while deploying existing federal powers to protect innocent life and vigorously complying with statutory bans on the federal funding of abortion.
Quote, according to current law, federal workers are to be paid wages comparable to equivalent private sector workers, rather than compared to all private sector employees. While the official studies claim that federal employees are underpaid relative to the private sector by 20% or more, a 2016 Heritage Foundation study found that federal employees received wages that were 22% higher than wages for similar private sector workers. The obvious solution to these discrepancies is to move closer to a market model for federal pay and benefits.
All right, so quick editorial on this one. Basically, they're creating their own litmus test for compensation, which allows them to benchmark federal employee wages and benefits against private sector employment tiers of their own choosing. So it's essentially a way to suppress wages in lockstep with lower wage private sector jobs. Okay, carrying on. Quote, although the government pension system has become more like private pension systems, it still remains much more generous, and other means might be considered in the future to move it even closer to private plans.
Quote, Congress should also consider whether public sector unions are appropriate in the first place. The bipartisan consensus up until the middle of the 20th century held that these unions were not compatible with constitutional government. After more than half a century of experience with public sector union frustrations of good government management, it is hard to avoid reaching the same conclusion.
Quote, U.S. defense strategy must identify China unequivocally as the top priority for U.S. defense planning while modernizing and expanding the U.S. nuclear arsenal and sustaining an efficient and effective counterterrorism enterprise.
Quote, the United States must regain its role as the arsenal of democracy. End informal congressional notification. Informal congressional notification or tiered review is a hindrance to ensuring timely sales to our global partners.
Just jumping in here again quickly. Basically, this is a way to subvert congressional oversight or even just informing them of military actions abroad. It's a pretty wide exception for executive authority that already has preposterous overreach. And speaking of overreach, this next one allows more aggressive military recruitment in schools. Quote, improve military recruiters' access to secondary schools and require completion of the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, ASVAB, the military entrance examination by all students in schools that receive federal funding, end quote.
Quote, those with gender dysphoria should be expelled from military service.
Quote, the use of public monies for transgender surgeries or to facilitate abortion for service members should be ended.
And again, with the executive overreach into military affairs, quote, make irregular warfare a cornerstone of security strategy. Define irregular warfare as a means by which the United States uses all elements of national power to project influence abroad, to counter state adversaries, defeat hostile non-state actors, deter wider conflict, and maintain peace in great power competition.
Quote, privatizing TSA screening and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, National Flood Insurance Program. Reforming FEMA emergency spending to shift the majority of preparedness and response costs to states and localities instead of the federal government, eliminating most of DHS's grant programs, and removing all unions in the Department for National Security purposes.
Getting rid of national flood insurance as climate change devastates low-lying areas of the country? What could possibly go wrong? Now we head to the border. Y'all remember when Border Patrol was caught whipping migrants and rounding them up on horseback? Well, here you go. Quote, CBP should restart and expand use of the horseback-mounted Border Patrol. As part of this announcement, the secretary should clear the records and personnel files of those who were falsely accused by Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas of whipping migrants and issue a formal apology on behalf of DHS and CBP.
Oh, sweet. Quote, ICE should be funded for a significant increase in detention space, raising the daily available number of beds to 100,000.
Quote, repeal temporary protected status, TPS designations.
Okay, so let's switch over to foreign policy recommendations. They start off with Iran. Quote, the decision to be free of the country's abusive leaders must, of course, be made by the Iranian people. But the United States can utilize its own and others' economic and diplomatic tools to ease the path toward a free Iran and a renewed relationship with the Iranian people. Basically, hey, they have to overthrow their own government, but we'll still definitely help make that happen.
quote, to contain Venezuela's communism and aid international partners, the next administration must take important steps to put Venezuela's communist abusers on notice while making strides to help the Venezuelan people.
All right, this one's hilarious. This is the definition of bait and switch. Ready? Quote, regardless of viewpoints, all sides agree that Putin's invasion of Ukraine is unjust and that the Ukrainian people have a right to defend their homeland. The next conservative president has a generational opportunity to bring resolution to the foreign policy tensions within the movement and chart a new path forward that recognizes communist China as the defining threat to U.S. interests in the 21st century.
Russia's so terrible, we should go to war with China. Make it make sense. It's like Bush invading Iraq after a bunch of guys from Saudi Arabia got together in Afghanistan to bomb the U.S. Now that makes perfect sense in Republicanville. Anyway, speaking of interventions, quote, specific countries in the Americas, such as Venezuela, Colombia, Guyana, and Ecuador, are either increasingly regional security risks in their own rights or are vulnerable to hostile extracontinental powers. The U.S. has an opportunity to lead these democratic neighbors to fight against the external pressure of threats from abroad and address local regional security concerns. I'm on a roll here, so let me take this one too, since we're talking about interventions. Quote, Africa's importance to U.S. foreign policy and strategic interests is rising and will only continue to grow. Its explosive population growth, large reserves of industry-dependent minerals, proximity to key maritime shipping routes, and its collective diplomatic power ensure the continent's global importance.
And we can get away with it when, quote, the next administration must end blind support for international organizations. The United States must return by treating international organizations as vehicles for promoting American interests, or take steps to extract itself from those organizations.
Oh, and in case we need to assassinate anyone without running it by Congress? Quote, the president shall demand creative thinking and a clear strategy as to how covert action fits within the president's broader foreign policy strategy.
All right, so let's switch over to domestic policy again, and this time we'll start with the media. Because you can't allow commies like Big Bird and gay couples like Bert and Ernie to permeate the minds of our children. Quote, the 47th president can just tell the Congress, through the budget he proposes and through personal contact, that he will not sign an appropriation spending bill that contains a penny for the CPB, that's the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The president may have to use the bully pulpit, as NPR and PBS have teams of lobbyists who have convinced enough members of Congress to save their bacon every time their taxpayer subsidies have been at risk since the Nixon era. The next president should instruct the FCC to exclude the stations affiliated with PBS and NPR from the non-commercial educational denomination and the privileges that come with it, end quote.
Quote, the next conservative administration should rescind all climate policies from its foreign aid programs, specifically USAID's Climate Strategy 2022-20307, shut down the agency's offices, programs, and directives designed to advance the Paris Climate Agreement, and narrowly limit funding to traditional climate mitigation efforts.
Quote, the next conservative administration should dismantle USAID's DEI apparatus by eliminating the chief diversity officer position along with the DEI advisors and committees, cancel the DEI scorecard and dashboard, remove DEI requirements from contract and grant tenders and awards, issue a directive to cease promotion of the DEI agenda, including the bullying LGBTQ+ agenda.
Quote, reform SNAP. Re-implement work requirements.
Quote, the USDA should not provide meals to students during the summer unless students are taking summer school classes.
Quote, the new administration must end abuses in the loan forgiveness programs. Borrowers should be expected to repay their loans.
Quote, in order to fully wind down the Department of Education, Congress must pass and the president must sign into law the Department of Education Reorganization Act.
Quote, privatizing all lending programs, including subsidized, unsubsidized, and PLUS loans, both grad and parent.
Quote, the Treasury should work with Congress to simplify the tax code by enacting a simple two-rate individual tax system of 15% and 30% that eliminates most deductions, credits, and exclusions. The 30% bracket should begin at or near the Social Security wage base to ensure the Combined Income and Payroll Tax Structure acts as a nearly flat tax on wage income beyond the standard deduction. The corporate income tax rate should be reduced to 18%, end quote. Okay, this one I need to contextualize. 40% of households do not pay income tax because they don't make enough money to even qualify to pay taxes. Also, there's no mention of K-1 income or carried interest provisions. So because the wealthiest people in this country really aren't paid like the rest of us, they can pay taxes like a corporation. So poor people who haven't had to pay any federal income tax will have to pay 15% no matter what, while the wealthiest people in the country would have to pay 18%. And those who make more than about $150,000, that's what they mean by the Social Security wage base, would have to pay 30%. And this doesn't touch carried interest income provisions that allow wealthy investors to hide money from the IRS and doesn't reclassify stock options as income either. It's just such bullshit.
Quote, all taxpayers should be allowed to contribute up to $15,000 adjusted for inflation of post-tax earnings into universal savings accounts, USAs. The tax treatment of these accounts would be comparable to Roth IRAs. USAs should be highly flexible to allow Americans to save and invest as they see fit, including, for example, investments in a closely held business. Gains from investments in USAs would be non-taxable and could be withdrawn at any time for any purpose. Max, help me understand this one.
Okay, this one's important. So this provision acts like your friend, but it's a Trojan horse. Basically, it's encouraging people to save their own post-tax dollars. Think about that. It's not pre-tax, like a college savings plan, for example. It's post-tax dollars. So it's like, oh, you got $10 left over? You're allowed to save it. Like, okay. The difference is it would allow these accounts to invest in closely held businesses or things like IPOs that have the ability to grow exponentially and be withdrawn without penalty. So this is basically a shelter that avoids capital gains, but it would be sold to the public as a personal responsibility investment that provides cover for their real desire, which is to phase out the Social Security Trust. As far as inherited wealth, quote, the estate and gift tax should be reduced to no higher than 20%, and the 2017 tax bill's temporary increase in the exemption amount from $5.5 million to $12.9 million, adjusted for inflation, should be made permanent. So basically, again, wealthy people can pass up to $13 million to their heirs without a dollar being taxed, and then everything above would only be taxed at 20%, which is still 10% less than what they're proposing for the middle-class income tax.
And don't worry, they're coming after your healthcare too. Quote, the Inflation Reduction Act, IRA, created a drug price negotiation program in Medicare that replaced the existing private sector negotiations in Part D with government price controls for prescription drugs. These government price controls will limit access to medications and reduce patient access to new medication. This negotiation program should be repealed.
Quote, strengthen asset test determinations within Medicaid.
Quote, clarify that states have the ability to adopt work incentives for able-bodied individuals, similar to what is required in other welfare programs, and the ability to broaden the application of targeted premiums and cost sharing to higher income enrollees. Add targeted time limits or lifetime caps on benefits to disincentivize permanent dependence.
Okay, so again, those are just the highlights. Like I said, this document is over 900 pages long. And it's co-signed by over 80 conservative organizations with incredible strength, financial wherewithal, and lobbying prowess. So here's the difficult conversation that we need to continue having. If Cornel West makes it onto the ballot in New York, I will still vote for him because I'm aligned with his beliefs and appreciative of his consistent activism over the years. Not because I think he's a good candidate. In fact, he's a terrible candidate and even worse politician. But New York is going to go solidly Democrat, so I don't have to worry. And it is a way to send a message to the establishment that they have work to do to win a lot of us over. And I think protesters should continue to disrupt every single Democratic event in support of a free Palestine and continue to call for a ceasefire at a minimum and the permanent halt to the atrocities and apartheid regime in Israel. We have to continue to push our elected officials to invest in poverty elimination, climate change resiliency, Medicare for all, $15 minimum wage, a path to citizenship, and so much more. But like I said in the Progressive Meditation episode, we lost the presidential election a long, long time ago when our candidates were sidelined by a corrupt DNC. None of our key issues made it to the Democratic platform, and the officials that we hoped would tie up the Democratic majority in Biden's first 2 years were soundly defeated and silenced. The election is not the time to stage an electoral protest. You don't even have to buy into the democracy-ending hyperbole either, because we don't have to wonder what a second Trump regime would look like. Those of us with power and a voice have an obligation to protect the least among us right now, as we work in the background to reorganize and gather our strength. This agenda is evil. This is dystopian corporate consolidation shit. And what's different this time around is that they own the court. So if we hand back the keys to the Oval Office to Trump and take the risk that Republicans take control of both houses, they won't flounder like they did in 2016 because of one key difference.
Republicans with time.
Here endeth the lesson.
It's the end of the episode where we used to do show notes. Now we just talk through a few things. Reflect on what was said or what we should have done instead. Oh, post-show musings.
All right, welcome to post-show musings, everybody. You can see I'm still flying solo without 99, who is up helping her dear sister 101 convalesce. We were together for show notes, but I'm recording this at a different time. So, Manny, thank you for doing the Lord's work to help me get through this really, really shitty agenda. I felt it was important enough to interrupt our series on the border crisis with this, just because I had been going through it for a couple of weeks. It was really kind of fresh in my mind. And now that Biden and Trump have sewn up the nomination, and after Biden, after this bizarre State of the Union where he just screamed at everybody for an hour, and then, of course, the Republican response where I didn't even know what the fuck that was. But so Biden screams his way at everybody for an hour and made it a campaign stump speech. I mean, it wasn't a State of the Union. It was a stump speech. It was just he used that time to campaign. And I think I'd written in the newsletter that they must have jacked some sort of like cocktail combination of like HGH and B12 and whatever the fuck else into his ass right before that, because, he was with it. He was on point, at least as much as he can be. He's just, God, he's a terrible speaker. Oh, good Lord. But yeah, it sort of dashed my hopes that the Democrats have some sort of alternate plan in their hip pocket for a contested convention, because it's like, no, I think this guy really fucking believes that he's got the energy and the wherewithal to go the distance here. So if it is a Biden-Trump rematch, it's on so many of the top items that people really, really care about in this moment, the management or mismanagement of the economy, what's happening in Palestine, the border crisis. There's almost no difference, if you can fucking believe it, between these guys. I mean, almost no difference. And so that does feed into the progressive notion that, like, well, what the fuck are we doing? I mean, what's the difference? Well, hopefully this really elucidates the difference between the two parties. They're going to go for it. I really believe in my heart that it's not so much that the Democratic hyperbole of like, oh, democracy is on the ballot and he's going to act like a dictator day one. He doesn't have to act like a dictator. He could just legislate all of this shit into existence or do it by executive order. I mean, he doesn't have to fucking rip the Constitution apart to do most of the things that is written here, right? I mean, they could, in theory, get rid of the whole Department of Education. Fuck it. I mean, it would be absolute fucking pandemonium, but they could do it. A lot of these, initiatives that, build language and diversity into government contracts, that can all go away. It can all fucking go away. I mean, just if you go through this list again, if you take a listen to it, again, these are all direct quotes, so you can take my word for it, not take my word for it. I know our audience will. I did the work. But, go take a look at this stuff. It's like one or two of these things alone is like, Jesus, who the fuck would do this? When you put them all together, you're like, whoa, this is bad. Because they've been working on it for 50 fucking years. And that's something I think that unfuckers appreciate. Now, at a different level, I certainly do, having done the work over the last few years to really tell the neoliberal story and this sort of tilt toward fascist tendencies that we've had over the last few years, it just became painfully evident that this was all just part of the plan. I mean, when you listen to Leonard Leo talk about, his goals for the Federalist Society, or, we had Eric Prince the other day, there's parts in here about South America and Africa. He's saying not even the quiet part out loud. If you take Eric Prince's words, where he's like, yeah, we just have to go recolonize fucking South America and Africa. or prop up dictators like Bukele, who are just, you know, imprisoning literally 100,000 of his citizens. And that's how he determined he was going to take control of his country. Like, we need to applaud and root for that guy and then encourage the other ones to do the same. And if they won't do it, we'll fucking do it for them. And by the way, all that oil that we fought for the past 100 years in the Middle East, that's great. We're a net producer of oil now. We're energy independent. Don't let anybody tell you that we're not. We are completely energy fucking independent at this point. There's nobody pumping more fossil fuels into the world than the United States right now. Period. End of story. Hard stop. But what we do fucking need are the minerals that are in Latin America and in Africa. So if you start hearing Republicans talk about, oh, we need to, you know, spread democracy in Latin America and safeguard the people, it won't be for the border crisis. And when they talk about spreading democracy and helping safeguard, you know, countries in Africa, that's not going to be because they want to, you know, stop the spread of communism in Africa. It's going to be because we need the fucking minerals because we're going to start to make chips here ourselves. So there you go. I mean, that's fucking it, right? It is imperialism. It's naked colonialism. It is the next level of neoliberalism. And it is for shit sure the inverted totalitarian state that we've been talking about. That's the plan. And they fucking wrote it down. One of my favorite movies is True Romance. It was the first movie that Quentin Tarantino wrote, but he didn't direct this. It's the only one I think he wrote but didn't direct. And there's some pretty tough language in it. There's the one scene where Christopher Walken is with Dennis Hopper, and no, it's not the part that you're thinking. And he says, "You know how I know it was your son is because he left his wallet in the dead guy's hand." You know, he's like, he told them everything that we needed to know at that moment, right? And he was talking about the show and tell. You're telling me nothing, but you're showing me everything. That's this. The Republicans are telling us. They're like, no, this is what we're going to do. And there's not a fucking thing you can do about it. We have the evidence. It's in the dead guy's hand, but the dead guy's us. Bizarre. Anyway, so that's a wrap on this episode. We're going to jump back into the border crisis. It's hard for me to tell you what the schedule is going to be. We're going to keep going with the newsletters. Remember, we don't put out just one newsletter. That's the free one that's available on Fridays. If you haven't signed up for that, just go to unftr.com. You'll find out it's very easy to subscribe to the free weekly newsletter. But we also have a second newsletter for paid members that goes out every single Tuesday. We do that in collaboration with the Newsbeat crew. By the way, shout out to Manny Faces, who just on his show interviewed Jamal Bowman. Holy shit, which is like incredibly awesome. So Manny, congrats on that get. That was very cool and it was a great conversation. Check that out on Fuckers if you haven't. Make sure you've signed up for our free weekly newsletter. If you can see your way to taking out a membership to help support us, we have another cool thing coming up. We do have our monthly hang announcement going out shortly. We have a special guest who's going to be on the monthly hang. That is for Comrade and above level members. And we are moving our studio. That's the other big announcement. That is happening within the next few weeks. So the schedule might be a little fucked up depending on how long it takes me to uproot this studio, plant it down in another place. And you know that moving is always really stressful. So it's a long time in the making and I'm really excited about it. And we'll talk about it a little bit more as we get set up in the new studio, but lots of moving parts going on. I appreciate everybody's patience. Just know that the content is going to continue to crank on unftr.com. The newsletters are going to continue to crank out. I should be back on track with the border crisis series coming up shortly. We're going to take a look at what's actually going on in Latin America and the Caribbean. And I think that's enough bullshit for right now. All right, I'm fuckers. Love you all. We'll talk to you soon.